Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
Show where we showcase new authors. This is show number 134. It is March 6, 2023. I'm your host, Tom Riddell, and co-host Terry Brown will be with us shortly. A brief intro to today's show. Tonight we have on Leah Parker, and we also have another guest on, and her name is Tracy Powell. They will be here to talk about Leah Parker's book, Letters to a Future Nurse, and we can't wait to talk to them about that. And that'll be coming up approximately 15 minutes after the hour. Now, more about us. Here's where you can find us out there. Find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriddell.net. That's thomasriddell.net in the blog section. And the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for The Writer's Lounge or find us easily on a Google search. Find me on Twitter at TomRiddell56 and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line and we will get back to you. A special note, we can now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike, and I also review books on both sites as well. And in this next section here, we talk about upcoming authors on The Writer's Lounge. And on March 20th, 2 weeks from tonight, we're going to have author Evelyn Puerto on, and she's got a book by the name of Flight of the Spark, the beginning of a dystopian series that is filled with love, adventure, and suspense. And this is one that is getting great reviews right now. And April 3rd, author Christopher Gould will be with us with his book, The George Stories. This is a story that will highlight the comical and tragic aspects of life. The George Stories explores themes of identity, regret, and the fragility of life, but is most chiefly the story of a man laid bare. I hope you'll tune in to these exciting upcoming shows on the Writer's Lounge. And the next segment we're happily to move on to right now, and that would be Writer's Topics. And this is where I introduce my award-winning, or our award-winning, co-author or co-host on this show who wrote Sunflowers Beneath the Snow, and she just wrote another book, An Enemy Like Me, and that just came out. And her name is Terry Brown, and I'm going to open up the doors and bring her into our imaginary studios here. And Terry, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How are you today, Tom?
I'm doing great. I hear that through the grapevine, because you are a very busy lady, that after you're done with our show, you're going to be doing another show. So instead of not just being in front of a keyboard, you're also in front of a microphone quite a lot these days, right?
Yeah, that's true. But I really enjoy doing the podcasts. It's a great way to get, you know, my story out there and get people to understand what it is that I'm writing. So
right.
I love being part of the whole podcast. Yeah.
Yes, you do. And that kind of falls into the topic that we were talking about in the last show, and like we'd like to continue, and that would be about marketing our books. And we do the writing, and that's a lot of fun a lot of times, but then comes the hard work, and a lot of people just are not ready for it. And a lot of people don't have the experience behind them that you do now. So with that being said, I would like to ask you if you could please give authors and any wannabe authors advice out there and how you deal with marketing your book. Specifically, let's talk a little bit about what we're on right now, I guess, across the internet would be social media. Talk to us a little bit about what you do to help to sell your books. Now it's books out there on the internet.
Yeah, so social media is still something that I don't know if I'm getting it right. Like, I'm doing a lot of stuff, and I feel like people are paying attention. On the other hand, you know, tells you, oh, you're not supposed to use the same thing on Facebook that you put out on other social media. And, you know, I don't have the time to create new content for every platform out there. So, yeah, I don't really know. It's hard. What I do know is that you need to be consistent. So I do put something out every day, and I'm trying to put the kind of things out there that help people get to know who I am as an author, even more than what my books are, you know, who I am and what it is that I stand for. So, like, I have a, every Thursday I give a writer's tip, and every Monday I make sure I have a word of the day where, you know, I put a new word out there. On Saturdays I have something that's funny where I just put, like, a funny author meme. So the one that I put out this past Saturday was a picture of me, and then it said, beware, anything that you say in front of an author can be used in their next book. And so, you know, I just try to, yeah. So I try to do funny things on Saturday. I'm starting a new thing that I'm going to put out on Wednesdays now, and it's called Research Junkie, because that's what I am. I love to do research. And so this will be little things that I found while doing research for my books. So I'm going to put little tidbits of, you know, this is what I found. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm doing it right.
You're just
doing
it.
I'm at least doing it.
I think that's the key word here, because we can all get tied up in people's advice. And not that it isn't important to get other people's advice, but sometimes it's kind of like writing. They tell you how to write. You know, you go to these workshops, writing workshops, and you study and you read the great authors and all of that. But when it really comes right down to it, what you got to do is you just got to sit down and write. And the same thing, I think, would be said about what you're doing as far as marketing. You're not just marketing your books, as you just explained. You're marketing yourself. So you want to get out there as much as possible to let people know that you're an interesting person, and that you have a lot to offer, and there's fun involved here. It isn't just about selling your books. And I believe, if I'm not correct, if I'm wrong here, Terry, but you also have a YouTube channel too, right?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I got started with a YouTube channel, and I'm just putting out little short video clips. Sometimes they're just funny, and sometimes they're serious. It kind of depends what kind of mood I'm in. I put one up a couple of days ago, was National Grammar Day, and I did one where I read I before E except after C,
yes,
and then
I
gave all
it.
The exceptions to the rule. And so it was this long sentence that had all of these I before E words that were not I before E and did not come after C. And, you know, and it ended with the word weird, which happens to be one of them. So,
yeah.
So I'm just trying to do things that get people to know who I am as an author and who I am as a person. So.
Right. And I found something really funny, or very truthful. It wasn't just funny. It's fact. And there was somebody had written a meme, and it said something along the lines of, what's the scariest thing for an author? And I commented, there was two things that I think are the scariest things for an author. And I got a lot of responses from, because we all like those likes, you know. And I had said that number one would be editing.
Uh-huh.
And number two would be reviews. Because I think that when you get into writing and after you finish your books, it comes first, the editor is going to go into your baby, and it's going to change everything about your baby. It's going to give it a whole different personality, and we hate that when it happens. And it's, quite frankly, it's pretty scary. It's almost like Frankenstein. You don't know what Frankenstein is going to do.
Yeah.
So then you get into the other part of it, and of course, the reviews. And I know we've talked before, but you certainly can relate to the reviews out there. So I thought that was interesting as something to think about. And, gosh, I just love watching you move along into your writing career here. It's been a short period of time of a little over a year, and here you are with two novels, and they're winning awards. And I'm so excited for you and can't wait for your third book. You've already got that done. That's
great.
Yeah,
well, I've got the third one. The first draft is done. On Sunday, I leave for my two-week writer's retreat, and when I come back from that, I hope that I have a majority of my rounds of editing done before I actually take it to an editor. So.
Great. Well, we were going to talk a little bit longer, but we have a show tonight that I think is going to require us a little bit more time on the air, and we want to talk to these two wonderful people that are coming on to the Writer's Lounge tonight, and that would be Leah and Tracy, and we'll get on to that. And this is a segment called Guest Author Intro and Interview. That's how we got it down here on my little teleprompter thing here. It's not really teleprompter. It's a sheet of paper that I wrote it all out on. So anyways, Leah Parker, Letters to a Future Nurse. I want to remind everybody out there that if you are listening live, you can call in. The phone number is area code 914-219-0868. But just know that we have a lot to get in. So we'll try to get to a few calls if you're going to do that. But if not, you sit back and listen and enjoy yourself. I know there are people out there listening and might want to pick up the phone and call. But just know we have a lot of material to cover. So my review of Letters to a Future Nurse, Leah Parker has compiled letters from 22 nurses and has shared their stories of what it is like to be a nurse in this extremely well-written book. It was written to support and encourage future nurses, but I would broaden that to say that these are stories that will educate and enlighten anyone who has been a patient or may be a patient in the far to near future. These are the men and women who have dedicated their lives to be on the front lines of the healthcare system, much like the women who were on the front lines of war and who courageously attended to the injured and dying. These are servants of humanity who see us during the most vulnerable and difficult times in our lives. It truly is a demanding and complicated profession to be in. These last 3 years with a worldwide pandemic has shown us all how brave and dedicated these people can be. It has also shown us that there is a career that isn't for everyone. The stress and toll it can take on nurses, even their families, can be catastrophic. But these stories will inspire you to listen to what nurses do, and it really is a good first step to anyone who is considering to be a nurse. This book has stories about nurses, but it also introduces us to some very memorable patients. You'll read about the birth of babies when they are welcomed into the world, and in the same manner, you will read about what it's like to be at the bedside of patients who are ready to leave this world. At the end of each individual story and chapter, you will learn practical tips, which is meant to inspire, empower, and encourage you, the future nurse. And again, if you are a patient, you will know who will be at your bedside when life falters and sends us into a very difficult and scary time. I highly recommend Letters to a Future Nurse. This is a must read. And now it is our pleasure to welcome to the Writer's Lounge Leah Parker and Tracy Powell, two of the 22 authors who submitted stories to this great book about nursing. I want to welcome both of them to the Writer's Lounge broadcast. And let me reach over here and push the button. It opens the door and sends them into the studio. Hopefully, they're coming in now. And let's see here. My imagination is working very well here. I think I see Leah. And right behind her is Tracy. Leah, how are you?
Hello. Hi, Tom. It's so nice to be here tonight. Tuning
in. Thank you. And so, of course, we know you're not really in a studio. That's our imagination playing, and we are writers, so we are given the license to do that. But where are you calling from tonight?
So for my nursing job, I actually travel throughout the state of South Carolina, and I'm currently in Charleston.
Ah, okay.
Oh, lovely.
And then we have... And then we have to introduce Tracy. Tracy, where are you calling from?
Hi, Tom. I'm actually sitting in my home office outside of Orlando, Florida.
Oh, you're down where it's nice and warm.
It is very nice and warm and sunny.
What's the temperature?
It was about 92 today. It got hot.
Oh.
Wow.
Ooh. Wow.
Hot, hot.
Yeah, don't get any heat. Hope nobody gets heat stroke and has to see you or any one of your nurse friends from that kind of weather. But
warm weather this time of year.
Yeah. So anyway, before I get started here with asking questions of Leah and Tracy, I have to admit that that I have a personal connection here to Leah. And your mom, Leah, was good friends with a good friend of mine, Ann Hamilton, who told me all about your book. So I have to mention a thank you to Ann for, you know, bringing you on the show or getting you in touch with me so I could give you this opportunity tonight. So good for Ann for being there. And Leah, great to have you here again. Tell us about yourself.
Thank you.
And what was it that inspired you to put these stories out into the world?
So, obviously, I'm a nurse, and I've been a nurse for almost 2 decades now. And like many of my nursing colleagues, I was watching on the sidelines, i.e. Facebook groups and different other type group nursing groups I'm in, over the last 3 years. And, you know, nursing was tough before the pandemic, but I think the pandemic really exacerbated a lot of issues that we've been having. And so it was breaking my heart seeing in nursing groups every single day, you know, student nurses questioning their decision of going into the field because they were seeing seasoned nurses you know, asking about leaving the profession just on a daily basis in every single group that I was in. So I just really wanted to do something to encourage those student nurses. And I thought a book would be a great idea.
And when did you start writing letters to a future nurse?
So this idea was birthed
compiling, I suppose,
over a year ago. Yeah. I actually put the call out for my fellow nurses who might want to contribute almost exactly a year ago. But I had been thinking about the idea for months before that and just really needed the courage to actually do it. But last February is when I actually put the call, the very first call out for nurses who, you know, had stories that they might want to contribute to this project. So it took about from February to June, I think, June, July, to get all the nurses that are in this, all 22. And then once we got to July, we got rocking and rolling with, you know, the stories being compiled and went from there. But yeah, it's been about a year, but I was thinking about it for several months before that.
Very good. And Tracy, your contribution to Letters to a Future Nurse was very moving in that it reminds all of us as we are being attended to in the hospital that nurses are human beings too, who also struggle with life experiences, and they bring those experiences into the hospital room. Can you tell us some of what you wrote about in the book?
I focused on the mental health of nurses because a lot of times when we become nurses, we're so busy giving away to everyone else that we're not protecting ourselves and really taking good care of ourselves. And unfortunately, sometimes the stress of the job plus the stress of what goes on in our personal lives can build up. And oftentimes, nurses can be afraid to reach out for help. And sadly, suicide rates among nurses have never been great, but since the pandemic, they've gotten markedly worse. And so my purpose in doing my chapter was to try to catch young nurses, because my daughter is one. And when I heard about this opportunity, for me, this is a love letter to my daughter, to help young nurses understand how to start taking care of yourself so that you can reach out for help and recognize when things are feeling hard. Because we all, you know, when we take care of ourselves, we take care of our patients better. And more importantly to me, we shouldn't lose another nurse to suicide. And because I was a nurse who almost lost her life to suicide, I started speaking about it to try to break the stigma, and people know it's okay to reach out for help, and we need to take care of ourselves.
Yes, exactly. And in your story, you had mentioned there was a coworker of yours, a friend that worked with you, who displayed strength along with you in caring for the patients, but then she broke down, and she showed you that not everybody is, you know, a lot of people are putting on a face, but underneath all of that comes with a lot of, you know, past baggage and a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression. And that's all built into what you're just talking about. So that really stood out for me as being an important chapter in the book. And Terry, I can't forget to mention, you are connected in the healthcare system and have been for, excuse me, quite some time now with your husband. And I know that you probably have some questions that you would also like to ask or comments you would like to make.
Yeah, I know. So my husband has brain cancer. And we found out in June and have spent several different times in the hospital since June. And, yeah, without a doubt, some of the nurses that we have had have been instrumental in helping me keep it together or helping me find the care that we needed next, because there was a lot of questions in the beginning and a lot of, you know, you didn't know where to turn or what to do, and it was really wonderful. So I know that in the book, one of the things that was that I read was, it said, keep in mind the tone of your voice. A soft voice can calm many intense situations. Check to see if they need the hospital social worker to help pay for hospital parking. This was one thing I wish someone did for us. And it's when I read that, my thought was is the many things that were told to me. I had a nurse tell me, oh, did you know that you can get meals up here in the room with your husband? You don't have to go down to the cafeteria. You just go down once and tell them how many meals that you're going to get. They give you a voucher, and when you call and order his meal, you can order yours as well. And it was like, oh my gosh, that made things just so much easier, and it isn't something that I would have known on my own.
Right.
So knowing that, how difficult is it to focus on those little things when I know that the job can be very hectic and chaotic?
Leah or Tracy?
I think it's that exact reason. That was my story. That's why one of the reasons I went into nursing is because we were not offered those little gestures, and it was such a stressful time. My chapter focuses on my journey with the death of my daughter. She was born with a congenital heart defect, and we went through that journey, and she lived unexpectedly lived 2 months. And it was those little things that we were not offered. So that was the reason why I went into nursing, is because the lack of care that we received. So I know I can speak for me, and Tracy can answer as well. I know for me, it's very important to me to stop and notice those little things as I'm taking care of patients, no matter what area I'm working in. I've worked in, you know, labor and delivery. I've worked in psychiatry. Now I work with elderly patients who are, you know, pretty sick. So it doesn't take but a minute to do something for someone. It just, whether, like I said in my chapter, whether it's a warm blanket or, you know, in the area that I'm working in now, you know, whether it's taking a few minutes just to let my patient cry because they just lost their spouse, or even if they lost their spouse a year ago, I'm the listening ear that day. So just letting people know that you care, I think just goes a long way, despite how busy you are. I mean, you can make someone feel cared, you know, valued and seen in just a few minutes by, like I said, the tone of your voice, you know, just letting them know that you're there for them. And Tracy, you can give your thoughts too, because you work in a different area of nursing. But yeah.
No, I agree with that completely. And, you know, honestly, a lot of what has guided my nursing career is that old quote, they won't remember what you said or what you did, but they'll remember how you made them feel.
Yes.
And, you know, something like that, just the voucher for food, and just, I agree, this is about a human connection. And I was in the NICU, excuse me, I'm sorry, for many years, but now I'm a mental health nurse and nurse practitioner. And I went into this aspect of it for that reason, to help have that human connection. And I love this book because a good bit of it is about helping nurses be grounded and understand it's just those little things that can really touch a person's lives. And we're still the most trusted profession, right? And we are the largest part of healthcare. And so we make the greatest impact. And even on our most stressful day, I agree with Leah, it takes no more than 5 seconds to stop and give someone a smile and boost them up a little bit to impact the experience they're having.
Yeah.
Right, right. And Tracy, I totally agree with that. In, you know, being a patient here several years ago, I had a situation with my heart where I could have lost my life, and I had to shock me to bring me, not bring me back, but my heart rate had jumped up to 260 beats per minute. And I was scared, and the nurse came in and calmed me. Her eyes were about ready to pop out of her head when she looked at the monitor, but they ended up getting the heart rate back down. But it was a very scary moment for me, and if it wasn't for their human touch And I knew that the capabilities were there with them because they've been in the nursing profession for many years. But if it wasn't for that human touch, I don't know how I would have reacted to that very scary time. But it was that that actually pulled me through. But, Tracy, the next question I have for you is, if you had to pick only one thing that a person absolutely, without a doubt, needs to be a nurse, what would it be?
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'll tell you what I tell my daughter. It's hard to teach someone to be caring, right? We can remind them, but it's got to come from your heart. And so I focus on that because I can teach people how to do the skills and how to fill out the forms and all of those good things. To actually be a human being, and not just with your patients, but also with yourself. Because when you take care of yourself, you take care of your patients better. And so you've got to have some boundaries, and you've got to have a voice. And when you have those things, and you speak up for your patients and yourself, you've got that connection. And, you know, of course it takes some smarts to get through school and all those things. But I think for me, at the core, sadly, right now, it seems like there's a lot of people that go into nursing because it's an end to an end of a paycheck. But that's not what nursing is about at its heart. And so first and foremost for me, it's about the caring and then building on the profession from there and caring for ourselves as well as our patients.
Right. Terry, you have a question?
So, you know, in the past 3 years, COVID has obviously taken a toll on families and then on nurses as well. So what would you say to future nurses in regards to what needs to be done to better address, like, something like COVID happening in the future? Like, what do we all need to be doing? What do nurses need to be doing prior to something like that happening again?
What do we need to be doing
for
protecting?
I think they're already starting, but it needs to get better. One of the issues is staffing ratios. You know, how many nurses to patients? You know, for example, on, you know, like a heart floor, you know, one nurse to 3 to 4 or 5 patients. When I was 20 years ago, when I was a nurse, I was 1 to 20 patients. But nurses aren't accepting those large ratios anymore. It leads to burnout. So, and the pandemic just exacerbated that. So we need to have, like, by law ratios, because I think that's a huge issue. Paying nurses what they deserve. You know, there's a reason a lot of nurses choose to leave staff positions and become travelers. It's because of the pay. Nurses are a highly skilled profession, so you need to pay them. And I think you need to be really, I don't know, transparent. When the pandemic happened, a lot of facilities were just not being forthright with things like protective equipment and things like that. Nurses weren't even allowed to bring in their own masks. I mean, it was a mess. We need to have those protocols in place, which as a nurse of over 20 years, I thought we had those protocols in place. But as we saw with the pandemic, it kind of fell apart. Like nurses we didn't have enough masks. We didn't have enough paired at all for something like that. So we just need to make sure we're prepared with, I mean, just the basic equipment before we go into that.
Right.
I don't know, Tracy, if you have another perspective.
Go ahead, Tracy.
So I just want to understand a little better as far as, so I agree with everything Leah said, but are you also asking just what can we do to ensure that nurses and patients are cared for in general? Should a pandemic happen again?
Yeah, should it? Because, I mean, I know that, like, I don't know what it must have been like for you, but I know what it was like for me sitting on this side wondering, like, what would happen if I got sick? Was there going to be the care that I needed? And not even if I got sick with COVID, but what if I just got sick? You know, like, right. What if I had an appendectomy, you know, an appendicitis, and I needed to have an appendectomy? Or what if something happened, or I was even in a car accident or something? Because, you know, what we were hearing was really scary about what was going on mm-hmm. in the profession with nurses. And so, yeah, that the idea of just generally speaking, you know, how can we make sure that everyone who needs to be cared for can be cared for?
Yeah, I agree a lot with what Leah said. And, you know, it's hard because a lot of what we saw was out of nurses' hands. You know, we saw pictures
right.
of nurses in New York wearing trash bags, which honestly mm-hmm. I can't – that picture is etched in my brain, and it just shattered my heart. Like, I can't wrap my head around how in this country that happens.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of above us where administrations and government even needs to make sure things are in place so that this stuff, if it happens again, we've got – the processes in place, we've got the things in place that we need to protect us and to care for patients. Because we're human beings. We can only do so much with what we're given. And then, you know, you're right, it was intense. Behind the scenes, there were a lot of nurses who were being shamed and blamed and being told, you know, you're not working hard enough. Meanwhile, nurses are burning out like crazy and trying to do the best that they can. And it's just not
right.
sustainable.
Right.
So,
Leah, you had mentioned the ratios. Do you think they're improving within the last, say, 1 year? Are they getting any better, do you think? Have you heard any reports on any of that?
So I personally don't work bedside. I'm a nurse practitioner, but just from everything I'm reading, certain states are doing it good, doing well. California, they're doing well. Tracy, if you know more on this, please pipe in. But I know California, they have established ratios. A lot of nurses like to go to California. They get paid after a certain hour for overtime. They're doing it well. I think we all need to look at California as far as ratios go. As far as other states, I'm just not sure. I mean, there's a reason nurses are leaving to go to places like California. We just don't have it yet. And bills are not getting passed fast enough. There was bills introduced to introduce safe staffing and ratios, and they're getting stalled for whatever reason.
Yeah, I don't.
Yes.
I actually have a group that I started called Nurses Healing Nurses, and there's a couple of thousand nurses in the group from all over the country. And no, staffing ratios for the most part are not getting better,
yeah.
And it's hard because but one of the things that's burning out nurses.
I also know that there's a lot of traveling nurses. I'm an Uber driver here in Syracuse, New York, and I pick up a lot of traveling nurses, and I know that the pay is much, much better from what I'm told by them than what it would be for, you know, a normal, you know, stay in a hospital for them, that they travel and get a lot more money for that. Do you think that traveling nurses are helping the situation, or do you think because they're not really connected to the localities that they're really entering into, or the hospitals that they're entering into, do you think it's worsening those situations? What are your thoughts on that?
Travelers have been around for years. I know when I was in staffing and we had travelers come, it was always a relief because, remember, they're going into places where they're short-staffed. Now, like any profession, you have good travelers. You have travelers that aren't going to work as hard, but that's any profession. For the most part, I think travelers have to go into a hospital with minimal training. They have to be highly skilled and ready to go. They're not coming in getting, you know, a 12-week orientation. So it's a need right now because there is staffing issues, but there is a whole system here, like that Swiss cheese system. I don't know if you ever heard that concept. There are so many pieces to this puzzle that it's just not like travelers are the issue. It's the whole system is broken right now. Travelers aren't going to go anywhere because they're not fixing the root cause problem. You know, staff would stay if they were treated well, paid well, felt safe in what they're doing. And until those things are addressed, you're going to need, we want travelers because we need to fill those holes in staffing to safely care for patients.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And I was kind of getting off topic a little bit here. I know that in some professions, you know, we have to put on a face. I was in public safety for 30 plus years, and I've dealt and seen a lot. I was also a volunteer fireman, so I had to, you know, put that face on when we're in a situation where it's very stressful, and sometimes, you know, you got to cry a little bit. And there's a great movie line that I love in the baseball movie, A League of Their Own. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Tom Hanks said, there's no crying in baseball. I hope I did, you know, Tom good there. Yeah. But there's a sentence in this book that says, it's when you no longer have tears for your patients that you should consider a new career. So there are tears in nursing, but not in baseball. Can you talk to us about how nurses cope with their emotions, and how do you both deal with it when tears come for patients? And let's go with Leah first.
It really all just depends on what area of nursing you work with. So for a lot of my career, I worked in labor and delivery, and I worked specifically, because of my history, I worked with perinatal bereavement, families that were losing babies. So that's a very sensitive area, obviously. You know, Tracy worked in the NICU, and she'll speak to that too. But I think it depends. I mean, we're human, so it goes across the board, I think, for any area that you're working in. We're human, and I know if I'm with a patient and they've lost their baby or their spouse or they've just gotten devastating news, it's appropriate. You can have a tear with them. I know when we've had really just sad things happen on a shift where it wasn't appropriate to have tears with a patient. You know, we're out together in, you know, the nurse's station or wherever, just lifting each other up. And if it can't happen while you're working, because nights and days move fast when you're working, sometimes I know my nursing colleagues and I would go out to breakfast or have a lunch just to debrief. And I know for me, there's many days where I've just gone home on my own, and before I've gotten home, went somewhere to debrief and just deal with the emotions of whatever happened that day. Because, I mean, we are dealing with vulnerable situations, people going through the worst and best times of their life, whether it was delivering a baby or losing a baby. You know, we experience these highs and lows walking alongside people on their journeys. And, you know, you do have to process this. And this is why Tracy in her chapter and her group, I think, is so vital. And I was so happy to have her part of this book, because you have to process those emotions or you're going to break down.
Yes. Yeah. Tracy.
Yeah. And on to add to that, if it all sits inside, that's when things like PTSD and severe depression happen.
Right.
So it's important, you know, even if it doesn't feel safe in the work environment, to have an outlet, whether you're in therapy, whether you have a support group at home, whoever, you've got to have someone that you can talk to about these things and kind of release it. Because when we're in constant toxic stress, which oftentimes it is in the hospital, and it's never released, it just creates chaos within us. And we get kind of trapped in this cycle of depression and, you know, we're great as nurses at putting that aside when we have to go in and do our job and take care of people. And then it just keeps building inside of us. I know in the NICU, when I was there, we would have a lot of really awful cases, because sometimes you could have a baby for months. You get to know the family really well, you know the baby really well, and they could get sick and end up passing away. And it's devastating to everybody, because you get to know these people so closely. And so, you know, the NICU is a special kind of place, and I do feel like there, especially, like, we would take care of each other, and if you cried, it was okay. But, you know, we had to be careful around the families, because, of course, it's not our place to totally break down while they're having this horrible loss.
Right.
But, you know, you got to feel the feels, and I think it does help families when they see that you're human too and that you've cared for them. But we got to make sure that nurses are taking care of themselves as well.
Yes. I have to jump in here too really quick to say that there is crying as being an author and writers too, right, Terry? We've cried quite a bit, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of crying. I do a lot of crying. But I was just thinking when you were saying that, we actually had a I'm trying to think. I think maybe it was a nurse practitioner, and I can't say for sure, but they were coming in to give us the results of an MRI, and we were very, very, very concerned about what we were going to find. And she didn't come right out and tell us right away, and so I got really afraid, and then I just like kind of blurted out, "Have you seen the MRI?" And she said, "Yes," and I said, "Is there tumor regrowth?" And she looked so shocked, and she said, no, there's not. Well, I started to cry, and my husband started to cry, and then she started to cry. And actually, it felt so good to have her cry with us. We were crying with relief, but it was so good. It was good to know that there was humanity, that we weren't just a number, and we weren't just a name on a clipboard, you know, that we actually, even though we weren't a patient, because this was a hospital setting, this wasn't someone that we knew and had any kind of relationship with, that they cared, you know, and that they cared enough that when we cried with relief, that they cried with relief with us. It was really wonderful. So.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Terry?
So this is a show, usually we talk about writing and not nursing. So did writing help you at all, like when you wrote these letters? And does writing help you to be a better nurse or to understand the things that you've went through? And if so, do you have any advice for other nurses on writing?
You want to go first, Leah?
I can go first on that, yeah. I think we all have a story. I mean, even if you're not a nurse, I feel like I run into people every day that have experienced something in life that they want to share with others, right? No matter if you're a nurse or not. Now, in nursing, I don't think you have to be a nurse to, you know, want to be a writer. But, you know, if you have a story, I think it deserves to be told. And I think, like, we did a book collaboration. It was 22 of us. I think if you're nervous, doing a book collaboration can be a great way to dip your toes into the writing world and just tell your little bit of a story without having to have that whole responsibility of a whole book. Because, say for us, we're nurses. A lot of the nurses that joined with me, they're like, you know, I'm not a professional writer. So a collaboration, you know how stressful it is. And doing a collaboration took a lot of that pressure off and still allowed them to have this experience of, you know, putting their story out there, having it published, and having it touch other people. Because, you know, most of us are hearing stories from people that are reading our stories and how it's impacting them. And that's such a great feeling. So I guess I'm a big advocate for collaborations for those folks that are just too scared to commit to an entire book because it's definitely been healing for me, you know, doing this. And I've been in two other book collaborations where I was a contributor, not the lead, but it was a great way to get introduced to this writing world that's just so vast. And
yes. And Lee, I do know you're interested in other books because I've been reading that you do a little bit of book reviewing yourself. So we'll have to get into that at some point, maybe at some point in the future. So, it's always good to get into the fiction world. And Terry and I both invite you to come into our world and read what we've written, and also the authors that we have on our program. It's they're great. They're absolutely great. I've been doing this for 12 years now, and I just love it. Time I do it, and it's just wonderful. But I'd like to ask both of you, because we are getting short on time. Here we have about 10 minutes left. We could probably do another hour. But if you weren't a nurse, what would you be? Let's go with Tracy first.
You're going to laugh. I would be a writer.
Oh, there you go. Well, there's always time for you.
I think she's just trying for brownie points. That's what she is.
No, I'm really not. I actually, when I first went to college, when I was 19 years old, my major was writing, and I wanted to be a novelist, and I wanted to write. And unfortunately, at that time, when I was in my writing class, my professor said to me, "Don't ever stop writing. You have a gift for the world." And I stopped writing that day, because I had been through so much hard stuff in my life up to that point. I found it hard to believe that anybody could see any kind of good or talent in me. And it scared me when he said that. And thankfully, you know, I fell into nursing. It actually has served my life so well, and it's been a blessing in my life. And it took my mental health journey to help me realize I need to get my voice back. And writing for me is cathartic. And even when I wasn't writing for anyone else, I still journaled all those years. And now when things happen, especially about nursing, I write and then I submit it. And I'm like, so there's op-eds and things that I'll write. But I also, in my practice, I work with trauma survivors. And the thing I encourage them all the time is start journaling and start writing, because you can process so many things when you write. But
exactly,
my biggest dream is to be sitting on the side of a mountain in the snow in a cabin writing my book someday.
Yes, or a lake or an ocean at your door. I think
I don't know why my
great.
Vision is on a mountain.
Okay.
Your vision's on a mountain. Mine's with the waves coming right at my feet. So
yes, very nice. So the next subject is a little bit, it's a tough one. And I really like most of this. I liked all of the stories in the book, but the one that really caught my attention a lot was the chocolate ice cream story. And it relates to dying, and dying isn't easy.
Yeah.
Now, what is the one thing that you can offer a patient who is about to face their death? What would you say to them if you could, if you were next to them at bedside? And let's, Leah, take the first one to answer this one.
Well, being in nursing, I've had this experience, actually. One of my most memorable experiences in nursing was when I was a brand new nurse, you know, over 20 years ago, and I was working on a medical floor, and a woman that had been with us for several months, I think she had cancer, but she was stable, and she was on our floor because she had a heart monitor. But she was a DNR, which meant do not resuscitate. So if anything happened, we were not to do anything. And I happened to be working the night when all of a sudden her alarm bells on her heart monitor started ringing, and her heartbeat was going down, and it was so sudden. And we went in there, me and an LPN, I'll never forget it, and she was conscious, and we called her family, of course, but we had to, you know, I was in there. And, you know, that was one of the most profound moments, because when you think of, well, when I was younger, when I thought of someone dying, I just did not think of them conscious for some reason. And she was conscious, and me and the LPN were just rubbing her back and holding her hand and telling her that, you know, she was beautiful and to not be scared. And it was just one of those most profound moments of my nursing career, being with someone literally as they died.
Right. Tracy?
Well, you know, for me, a lot of the deaths that I've been a part of are babies. And so in the moment, for me, in those situations, it's really about how do I create the situation in which is unbelievably horrific for the parents, and how do I create this awful situation in a way that when they look back on it, it doesn't have to be as awful when, you know, going back to the how they made me feel thing. How can I set up the situation so that they can be together, they can hold their baby, they can know that they were loved and cared for by the people around them as this awful thing happens and they move through. And then, you know, with the babies, it's just keeping them comfortable and letting them be held and know that they're loved in that moment as they pass.
Mm. Okay, well, we are getting close to the end here, and this is the moment where we usually talk about our Oscar moment. This is where I would ask Leah to give any parting words of advice, or anyone who would like, who you would like to thank for the successes you've had in putting together this book. I'm sure there are lots of them, and there's probably 22 of them exactly, but anybody that you'd like to thank for the book and what you've done so far in your life?
Well, of course, the 22, all other 21 authors that contributed to this vision, and we've made such a beautiful project. I'm so proud of this book. But I also need to thank Joe Pronger Boone. She was a consultant that I had along the way. She was a more experienced writer who really just held my hand as I went through this process of creating this collaboration. Every step, the editing, she just helped be a second set of eyes on everything. And also Megan Larson, she actually is the creator of the course I took to learn how to do all of this, and she actually formatted my book. So just really appreciative to her. And of course, my graphic designer, Christina Foster, and Melissa Denelson, who is my editor. And of course, my family, who was, got to hear the crying, the laughter, the frustration all year of trying to put this project together. I have to thank them first and foremost because they were really my support system.
Well, Leah, I'm sure there's a lot more coming from you in the future. I would try to inspire both of you to sit down and write a novel someday, and I think that it would be something that you could look forward to, especially Tracy there is already kind of delved into that a little bit. But
on the bucket
thank
list.
You. There you go, on the bucket list. That's what I like to hear. So, Terry, any quick response here to Terry and Tracy and Leah?
No, it's just been really nice to have them both here and to listen to their stories and to, get some human touch idea around nurses. I think sometimes it's easy to forget that nurses are people too, they're not just medical, mm-hmm. they're not just in and out of your room, doing whatever it is that they're doing, but that they're people, and it's good to hear that. And I think that this book is a wonderful thing for future nurses, but also for people who ever find themselves needing to be somewhere where nursing care is necessary.
Exactly. And Leah, where can we contact you if we need to?
With LeahParker.com is my website and email address. So with LeahParker.com or with LeahParker@gmail.com.
Very good. Leah and Tracy, I get so many people on here that I can't keep the name straight. Leah and Tracy, thank you so much for being on the Writer's Lounge, and we wish you much success. And thank you for everything that you're doing. I really sincerely mean that from the bottom of my heart. And you guys are great. Nurses are wonderful. And thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yep. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Make sure that I hang up on the right person there, Terry. I didn't want to hang up on you. But that was an exciting another show in the can, as they say, and
We
talked about some very emotional things here on our program, Leah Parker in Letters to a Future Nurse. And so anyways, we look forward to 2 weeks, Terry, when we will be having author Evelyn Peruto on, and she wrote Flight of the Spark, as I said before, the beginning of a dystopian series that's filled with love, adventure, and suspense. And this one is getting great reviews. And Terry, good luck with your endeavors. I know you keep on going and going and going like that Ever Ready Bunny does. And
And
keep going. And much thanks to your husband, too, for keeping you going as long as he is able to, and you are able to keep him going. And he is going. I know he is going. So that's a good thing. So until then, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Terry and I will see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well and have a good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. Of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make two lovers alive.